We'll bring you our second excerpt from the Hamvention FCC Forum in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Todd Benson, W9YK, with this rain report. One of the popular forums every year at the Dayton Hamvention is the FCC Forum. This week, we bring you our second excerpt from the May 19 FCC Forum held during the 2012 Hamvention, and we heard from Bill Cross, W3TN, in our first installment of this series. This time, we'll hear from Kurt Bartholomew, N3GQ, from the FCC Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau. His talk is entitled, Disaster Communications, Current Capabilities with the Amateur Radio Community. Here now is Kurt Bartholomew, N3GQ.
My boss asked me to say that the opinions expressed in my presentation are not necessarily those of the FCC. Okay, what would you do right now if the ceiling on the roof above you suddenly blew off and your experience tells you that it's a powerful tornado? Flying debris causes most deaths and injuries during a tornado, and although there's no completely safe place during a tornado, some locations are much safer than others. So, number one, take cover immediately. Number two, keep tuned to your local radio and TV stations or to a NOAA weather radio. And by the way, do you have a NOAA weather radio in the memory channels of your handheld radio? How about local AM and FM stations? Good show. Three, move away from windows and glass doorways. Four, go to the innermost part of the building on the lowest possible floor. And five, protect your head and make yourself as small a target as possible by crouching down. And you're all good to go now. All right, let's talk about what's in this briefing. Your skill sets and the bottom line, which I think is the bottom line. The congressionally mandated amateur radio study that Bill Cross mentioned earlier. Preparedness for tomorrow. Answers to a digital question that I asked at the Tapper DCC. And your efficient use of spectrum. 911 and MCOM today. Our changing values and a call to action. A little bit about my background. 42 years in amateur radio. Career as a U.S. Army intelligence officer, including three combat tours. And over the past 19 years since I retired, I worked in five federal agencies. I was a watch commander at the U.S. Department of State, a police officer at the Federal Protective Service. At FEMA headquarters, I was their expert for continuity of government and operations. And at the DHS Office of Intelligence and Operations, I ran their continuity program there too. And for the past 3.5 years at the Federal Communications Commission. Enough about me, let's talk about your skill sets. It's incumbent on every amateur radio operator to obtain at least a minimum level of knowledge and skill in emergency communications. Because emergencies are a matter of when, not if. So what do we need? We only have anecdotal data drawn from emergencies, disasters, and some courses that we've seen that indicate what may be minimal needs for amateur communicators. But what do you think was needed for 9/11, hurricanes, tornadoes, ice storms, floods? What do you think? In 1986, there was a book written called America's First Battles. It studied 10 battles from the Revolutionary War to Vietnam. The U.S. Army won 5 and lost 5, but 4 of the 5 wins were quite costly. What was the takeaway? This is from the book. Preparedness has never been reckoned a strong suit of military capacity. Interesting quote. The book was published during the Reagan administration's Peace Through Strength program, and during that period, the Pentagon's increased budget enabled them to train and retain highly quality recruits who were then prepared for the next battle. So the next question is, Desert Storm, how did we do? Were we ready? We had a big budget for training, good recruits? Yes, and we did a good job. Let's talk about amateur radio's preparedness. 2001, were we ready then? No. 2012, are we ready now? It's 11 years later. No. So, what will it take for us to get ready? Bottom line, in my opinion, if you could only choose 3 items, just 3, preparedness, what would they be? Here are my 3 picks. 1, motivation. 2, standards. And 3, training. And surprisingly, the federal government is now beginning to examine these and some other issues. Which brings us to the federal study, H.R. 3630, which closed a couple days ago. Here's why we think we needed the study. Because we have very little data on operate. We have your name, address, license, class. That's about it. We don't have a whole lot of data anymore. So here's what we hope to learn from it. Emergency activations and deployments. Emergency communications and training needs, how the FCC rules affect amateur radio emergency communications activities, whether additional national data transmission standards are needed, whether national certification programs are needed, and how land use restrictions affect amateur operations. As an example, it's incumbent upon each of us to obtain all the necessary specialized training that we need to be effective in an emergency. We don't have any records of this, any knowledge of this on a nationwide basis. We have some anecdotal stuff that we happen to know, but we'd like to have some more information on that. And as you know, amateur radio operators today often provide for the transport of messages. They're not necessarily the person behind the message. We're involved with its delivery. So, the other thing is we're often not required to show the ability to set up and skillfully operate an emergency station. We don't even have anecdotal information that this is or is not occurring on a nationwide basis. And to continue on, I think that the FCC should consider some more guidance in order to comply with the National Incident Management System, which communities now must do, establish response standards, mesh with government incident command systems, ease mutual aid initiatives, provide a basis for credentialing, provide seamless communications interoperability, and build and improve relationships with served agencies. The last one is key. Build those relationships with your served agencies. Very important. We want to be able to help every community prepare to respond to emergencies, disasters, and catastrophes. We want to minimize the effects of disasters and emergencies through better communications readiness. We still want to hope where and how our MCOM volunteers use to support these emergencies and disasters. We'd like to know. And in our next steps, what are the most urgent MCOM challenges and impediments? And can the FCC and other federal agencies assist in resolving them? In fact, there's another federal agency here. Ross Merlin, where are you? Office of Emergency Communications, Department of Homeland Security. In the future, we want to be able to take the information you provided us and be able to see if we can help set objectives for the service and possibly some courses of action to fix the problems that have been identified. Last September, I gave a little briefing at the Tucson Amateur Packet Radio Digital Communications Conference, which was held in Baltimore, and I asked this question on a slide, and I got lots of answers, and the question was, if you were limited to just use one or two HF ARQ digital modes to send messages whose content absolutely and positively had to be accurately received, what would they be? ARQ. ALE? ARQ, sir. Yep, we heard a couple. PAC-DOR 4 is not allowed in the current amateur rules. Preparedness. So I'm hopeful that the federal study will help us assess the amateur radio service's emergency preparedness. Okay, let's talk about tomorrow. Will the volunteer emergency communicator of tomorrow be prepared enough to provide the connectivity and level of service sufficient to be of value to local governments, volunteer organizations active in disasters, like the Red Cross, and citizens during significant events such as a major earthquake, major tornado, major hurricane, major disaster, a major criminal act, or a major terrorist act? How often has a major weather or major event hit your area? Once every 5 years? 12 years? Small emergencies help us prepare for larger ones. The ubiquitous and generally resilient nature of modern wireless communications networks increasingly affords us fewer opportunities to train because the smaller emergencies are repaired relatively quickly, usually within hours, and in many cases circuits are routed around the problem area. Some of you will recall when amateur radio operators were the only folks who could get a phone line while mobile or away from a landline. How did we do that? Anybody remember? A lot of repeaters still have this capability. Auto patch. And it still is in parts of every community without ubiquitous cell phone coverage. Cell phone coverage has become an interesting problem today, and there are other issues associated with it. But this brings me to a very, very sad story. In the Catskills area of New York, you may have read the news. The Associated Press on 11 May 2012 reported the following. I'll just read this from the article. An elderly Manhattan couple whose car became stuck near wooded Catskills vacation home died of exposure after 9 fruitless attempts to make a cell phone call for help and after the woman searched in vain for a neighbor. Cell service is spotty in the rural area and calls made by the couple to 911. The woman's son and a neighbor did not go through. They died of exposure. Couldn't get a call through their cell phone. What does that tell you? It tells me a lot. Very sad. Very tragic.
You're listening to a talk about emergency preparedness, NCOM, in the ham community, delivered by Kurt Bartholomew, N3GQ, from the FCC Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau. We conclude our excerpt from his talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report. I'm Todd Benson, W9YK.
So let's talk about preparedness. Here are a few questions to ask ourselves. Is your goal kit ready? Do you have a portable HF NVIS antenna? Will you be using packet radio to support the Red Cross or something different? Are you proficient in message and traffic handling? Are your spare batteries charged? Do your repeaters have backup power? What emission types and modes will you be using? And the list goes on and on. Future access to spectrum. What is one way you can help ensure that emergency communicators and hobbyists in the future will have all the access that they need to currently make themselves available to the current spectrum? Well, let's talk about the efficient use of what we have now. This is a little bit lengthy, but I hope you get the point here. In the commercial sectors, where organizations pay for the use of spectrum, there is a significant economic incentive to use the resource efficiently, to spread costs over as many users as possible while maintaining good quality service. That is, there is a strong incentive to develop and adopt more spectrally efficient technology. For example, by adopting various digital techniques, commercial mobile radio service providers like cellular have been able to dramatically increase their capacity compared to the original analog technology. And that's really important today for smartphones. Huge increase in need for bandwidth for them. In the past, hams have also adopted more spectrally efficient technology. For example, that when we migrated from double sideband amplitude modulation to single sideband modulation, and more recently by shifting to more efficient modulation for text like teletype, and those types of modes, we need to continue to shift towards more spectrally efficient communications techniques, especially digital techniques. Such a shift has a number of positive benefits. First, it demonstrates to policymakers and regulators that you are good stewards of the public's airwaves even without their economic incentives. Second, by using what you have efficiently, it strengthens your case when you need to ask for additional spectrum. Third, by allowing more users to access the available allocations simultaneously, it improves the amateur experience and ultimately increases the attractiveness of the service to new and older users alike. Fourth, it provides an opportunity or headroom for increases in data rates to more closely match those available on wireline networks and in the future on commercial wireless networks as well. And fifth, as the rest of the telecommunications world makes a transition to digital techniques, and there are very few exceptions to that, the amateur service will look antiquated if it is not making progress in that direction as well. Looking to the future of the amateur radio service in this new century, it is to our advantage to continue our traditional roles in public service by being prepared and for and providing communications in times of emergencies, conducting experiments, providing training in radio communications, and encouraging international goodwill. But it will be particularly beneficial if we focus attention, for the reasons just mentioned, on experimentation with digital techniques that are capable of squeezing more bits per second per hertz of bandwidth out of the increasingly valuable radio spectrum resource. So it has increased pressure on us now to justify our free use of this very precious resource, which is very expensive today, as you know. So our challenge is, let's continue to adopt more spectrally efficient technologies, modulation, and emission types. Let's talk about what's happening today. We learn, but then we forget. People will remember until they don't. And then there will be another disaster for which we aren't prepared to respond. On 9/11/01, cell phones were not ubiquitous to satisfy the desperate need to communicate during that disaster. And a phone network still cannot differentiate between legitimate emergency calls and casual social networking calls unless you are a public safety official who has WPS on your cell phone. You know what WPS is? Wireless Priority Service. But even if you have that, it still requires an open cell tower channel to get your call through. You are queued. Is that right, boss? Okay, in any event, cell phones now are ubiquitous, but they offer a false sense of security. Cell towers near any emergency are the first parts of the communications infrastructure to become overloaded. So, will you have your trusty handheld or mobile with you during emergencies? Where's yours? Who brought one? Excellent. This is the FEMA 10 regions, and I did this to, you'll see the next slides, to show the highlights that you've done over the last year. Just a few of them, not very many. And this is also a reminder, by the way, to work on your relationship with your local public safety community and your public information officer. So let's celebrate your successes. Here are some headlines from a few of your successes from the past year by FEMA region. And remember, if you don't publicize your successes, the public will never know how and when you are helping them. Amateurs assisted with communications in the aftermath of rare October nor'easter, Region 1. Region 2, Puerto Rico hams helped with Hurricane Irene response, 21 August. Region 4 and 5, hams in Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio provided support during and after a tornado outbreak. Region 4 and 6, hams in Arkansas and Alabama provided assistance to the National Weather Service during severe Sunday storms on 22 January. There's more. Region 6, North Texas hams responded when tornadoes struck on 3 April this year. Hams from North Carolina to Maine provided communication support before, during, and after Hurricane Irene, 27 August. Region 7, Missouri hams helped out when 911 service went down. Nebraska hams provided access to 911 services on 22 June. Radio amateurs assisted American Red Cross, Saturn, and served agencies during the Joplin storm and tornado on 22 May. And in Region 8, North Dakota hams provided support during river flooding, 22 June. One more. Region 9, amateur radio operators provided support for Arizona and New Mexico wildfires, 29 May. And Region 10, when a brutal storm slammed Alaska, hams provided critical communications. And those are just a few that happened in the last 12 months. It's not bad. Not bad for reporting, not bad for support. There's a lot more out there that I haven't put on slides. You could probably be here for the whole hour just talking about them. The little ones count. Everything counts. The point of the matter is you'll be needed again. 2001, we had our terrorist attacks. 2005, Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. 2009, Kentucky ice storms. 2010, Haiti's earthquakes. 2011, Japan's earthquake and tsunami. So it's not like we won't be needed again. We will. Let's talk about you for a minute. Do you care? When you go home after your visit here, I ask you to look at your radio station. Is it ready for an emergency? Are you ready for an emergency? Have you prepared your family for an emergency? You can't help others until you are prepared. If you prepare, it shows that you care. And now we're coming towards the end of the presentation, and this to me is pretty important. Have your values changed over the years? Do you think of yourself as a citizen with a reciprocal obligation to fellow citizens and to our country? We know that in America, war requires sacrifice, but so does American citizenship. Your character is your fate. Do you want to be a generic ham? Or do you want to be the ham who stands up to help his community in its time of need? You may have to clash with the Titans, so be a happy warrior. And do not duck or fear the fight. Do we not still have a can-do spirit? Wherever I go, I carry in my wallet a little quotation from a previous president. You probably heard this before. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. President John F. Kennedy. Our country needs us now more than ever. It's a noble cause. Lots of people are excited about their new smartphones and all their new applications. But when the nearest cell towers are overloaded in an emergency, there's no app for that. You are the custodians of the nation's final communications backup. Get motivated, get standards, and get trained. And in closing, I ask you to be the ham that your country needs you to be. Thank you.
The thoughts of Kurt Bartholomew, N3GQ, from the FCC Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau, delivered during his May 19, 2012 NCOM presentation at the Dayton Hamvention. Next time, we'll bring you some of the Q&A session that followed the formal presentations that were given by Cross and Bartholomew. Perhaps one of your questions will be answered. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990 through 2012. RAIN, all rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with the RAIN Report, I'm Todd Benson, W9YK, wishing you very 73 from all of us with the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.